This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. And the first story we look at is the fourth quarter GDP rates are out and they've been announced, and it's 6.1, they've fallen to 6.1%. So the economy doesn't seem to be in a very good shape. It seems to be slowing down. What's your perspective on that?
You can't rely about numbers, right? I mean, you have to take numbers for what they are. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people have previously questioned the GDP data, but then it doesn't make sense to question the GDP data when it is good and not question it when it is bad.
Right.
We've always maintained that the new GDP series is the new GDP series. I mean, it's got some issues, but at the end of the day, you'll have to take it for what it is.
Right.
So 6.1% is a clear indication that demonetization did have a sharp adverse effect on the economy,
right?
I mean, there are no two ways of doing it. And according to our own team of economists and editors and analysts, the gross value added at constant prices grew only 3.8%, less than 4% in the fourth quarter. That's a significant impact of what demonetization has done to private sector activity, private sector business. So clearly, demonetization has had an adverse effect on the economy. We all said we'll have to wait and see what the impact is. Now I think the numbers are out. And I think that's the big takeout from what's happened. On the other side, as we ourselves have been writing, the economy does seem to have recovered from the effects of demonetization, which is evident in the results of some of the companies that have started to come out. And so I think we are back to where we were in October, which is macro numbers looking largely good, manufacturing activity looking largely good, FDI looking very good, stock markets looking good, an uptick in consumption activity, and the beginnings of some activity on the investment side. It's not a bad place to be in. But big takeout, clearly, demonetization did hit the economy. Did it achieve the other objectives? Was the primary motive political? Those are some of the questions that now need to be asked.
Right. But where do we go from here? I mean, what do...
Which is exactly what I said, right? The macro numbers are not looking bad. We are where we were in October. So I think going forward, next year could well be... I mean, the full year... 2016-17 was a 7.1% growth of GDP. Next year, we'll probably do more. We could probably do around 7.5%.
Right.
So between 7 and 8% for the next 2-3 years, it's not bad. You're now a 2.3 trillion economy. For a 2.3 trillion economy to grow at 7.5%, 8% is a pretty good deal.
Right. Moving on, the next story we discuss is, the importance of the privatization of Air India. So Air India, as we all know, is sort of, it has a lot of operational inefficiencies, it's debt-ridden, it's not able to compete with its other private sector operators. So is privatization a good route to take? And what is your view?
Privatization is always a good route to take. But, you know, I'm not going to make too much of what is being said about Air India because it's been said before, right? I mean, there's been this thing of, oh, we will privatize, oh, we will not privatize, oh, we'll make it more efficient, we'll get someone from the private sector, we'll set up a board of top-notch people whom we get from the private sector. So there have been lots of things that's happened to Air India. The question to ask is it too late? Because I think if Air India had to be privatized, it should have been privatized before the aviation boom.
Right.
Sure, there's now a regional aviation boom that is happening. And I don't mean regional as in Southeast Asia or anything, but I mean regional as in within the country.
Right.
So, yes, part of the aviation boom is still there. But I think the first big aviation boom that happened in India, Air India completely missed out on that. Maybe the late 90s or the early 2000s would have been a good time to privatize Air India. It didn't really happen.
Right.
Now has so much accumulated debt on its books and is so opaque that people don't even know how much debt it has on its books, right? I mean, the estimates vary between 30,000 crores and 40,000 crores. I mean, it's miserable that you don't have clarity about how much debt Air India has on its books.
Right.
What is its financial performance? So I think it's probably a little too late. And who's going to buy stakes in Air India, right? I mean, which private airline in its right mind is going to come and buy stakes in Air India?
Right. Moving on, we had the Internet Trends report by Mary Meeker, yesterday, and you did some analysis on that after going through that big chunky report. And
355 pages,
yes,
of it.
It has a good number of slides devoted to India this time, where it talks about, you know, the growing obsession with mobile and also the impact that Jio has had on the internet in India. So please share your views.
Yeah, I mean, big takeout is something that we all knew.
Right.
We are now a mobile country. Number of internet users has gone up. Last June, there were around 355 million internet users, and these are monthly active internet users.
Right.
These are not ever internet users, so it's a good number. As of March, we had around 277 broadband users, most of them wireless broadband.
Right.
72% of people who are accessing the internet in India are accessing it on mobile phones, and people spend 28 hours a week
on
the mobile phone, right? I mean, 28 hours a week is 4 hours a day on their mobile phones, as compared to 4 hours in front of the TV, and they spend 2 hours reading. So these are like huge numbers. Clearly shows that it's a mobile market. And the significant thing in the report is the sharp impact that RJio has had on the market. From the time RJio has entered the market, the amount of data consumed has gone up significantly.
Right.
It's gone up around 5 times. The prices have fallen. They've almost halved across various telcos. Of course, RJio's prices themselves are next to nothing, right? Because there's still various offers that are going on. So that's on the good side. What's on the bad side? The fact that if you look at the prices of smartphones, they're still relatively high when you compare it as a proportion of GDP. Sure, broadband prices have come down sharply, but this is still significantly high as a proportion of GDP, and I think that is a problem.
Finally, we come to the big story, which has sort of been making the rounds, which is Trump exiting the Paris Accord, and lots has already been written about it, and people are calling it a misguided action, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think this is unfortunate. Countries will have to think beyond themselves. I think self-interest is important, but I think everyone also needs to have larger concerns about what's happening to planet Earth as a whole. Everyone has to worry about what's likely to happen to future generations. So I just think that the US has sort of relinquished its leadership of the free world, as some people are saying it. I agree completely. I think Fareed Zakaria said it on CNN first.
Right.
You need some countries to stand up. I'm very happy that India has agreed to stick to its commitments, irrespective of whether the US is part of the accord or not. I think around 140 countries have already ratified accord and will stick to their commitments. They should go ahead and do it. And I think everyone should begin treating the US as what it is. It's an outcast. I mean, you can't relinquish your environmental responsibilities in such a way. What's the larger message? It's a complex world. Issues are complex. I mean, you can't expect political leaders to be the smartest people in the world, right? I mean, it doesn't work that way. But they're all very savvy, and they should know enough to have enough smart people around them to understand issues. It's very clear that the current US leadership does not understand climate change. And if you're still debating whether climate change is real, doesn't make any sense at all. So it's an unfortunate thing. This is not some tin pot country which has said, I'm not going to be part of this thing because I want to do my own thing. This is the most powerful, the richest democracy in the world. A country that has set new standards in innovation. A country where constitutional rights, freedom of expression, all of these are best in class. And for them to do something like this is shocking. And I think over the next few days and weeks and months, we'll probably see the impact of this. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other countries also decide to play hardball now, which is why, like I said at the beginning, I'm very glad that India has gotten early and made its commitment, reaffirmed its commitment to COP21.
Right. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.